It was the year of fans.
The year of engagement.
The year we had great conversation.
It was the year of reruns.
The year JP joined us.
The year of moves.
And the year of joy.
It was the news show.
It was the end of bloopers.
It was the year everything connected.
The year is 2018. The Place, the Babylon Project podcast.
Hello there, Babylon 5 fans. Welcome to Season 4 of, well, not only the Babylon Project podcast, but of Babylon 5. This is Raul Wybera, and I am joined by my good friends, Jim Arrowood and J.P. Harvey. How are you tonight, gents?
Great.
Great here, too. Looking forward to Season 4.
Yeah, Season 4. I can't, you know, this is JP starting his second year with us. Well, actually, he had some guest spots on Seasons 1 and 2. But wow, it's been a while for us now, Jim, hasn't it? Coming into Season 3 and 4.
Yeah, a little bit.
You got to be honest. This year has been the longest decade of your life.
Actually, 2017 was so far.
Yeah.
The good news is I'm running out of family members to die. It's coming down to me.
Oh, next, no.
So we'll try to avoid that.
Good.
Well, what episode, Jim, is Season 4, Episode 1?
Yep, we're looking at The Hour of the Wolf.
Oh, no Duran Duran songs tonight, though, right?
No. Nope, I got nothing there.
Okay, Hour of the Wolf.
Yes.
Interesting title. What is it? I think Susan explains it to us sometime through, so we'll bring that up then. It's fair actually enough. A real reference. But let's go ahead, give us a summary, and then we can dive straight into the show.
Coming right up.
Archive. Access. Initiated.
It has been 7 days since Sheridan disappeared. The League of Non-Aligned Worlds is pulling their ships back from Babylon 5, believing that the war is over, or to protect their own homeworlds. Ivanova has been unable to sleep and wanders around the station in a daze. When Delenn is refused aid from Kosh to help determine if Sheridan is dead or alive, she turns to Lita Alexander for help. Lita tells Delenn that if they can take a white star to Zahadum, she might be better able to detect what Sheridan's actual status is. Upon arrival at Zahadum, Lanier sends a message calling for Sheridan to respond while Lita puts up barriers to keep the shadows from detecting them and at the same time see if she can feel Sheridan's presence. She fails at both tasks, and the shadows disrupt the White Star's crew's mind with their powers. Lanier had anticipated that something like that might happen and had programmed the White Star to jump back into hyperspace. Once the White Star is clear of Zahadum, the shadow's spell is broken. Meanwhile, on the station, Ivanova accepts that Sheridan is dead and begins making plans to carry on from where he left off. Londo returns to Centauri Prime to resume his duties as advisor of planetary security. It isn't long before he determines that Emperor Cartesia is stark raving mad and has also allowed the Shadows to use a small island as a base of operations on Centauri Prime. Londo then meets with Mr. Moradin, who appears to be badly injured from a dose of radiation. Moradin tells Londo that he and his associates have been forced to seek outside assistance earlier than they expected. Later, when Londo intimates his concerns about the Emperor to another minister, he is warned that it is believed that others who have criticized Cartesia have been beheaded and that their severed heads now serve as a morbid advisory council in some secret room in the palace. Londo summons Vir to join him on Centauri Prime so they can conspire to remove the Emperor from rule. Not only has Sheridan gone missing from Babylon 5, but so has Garibaldi. Jacquard decides to go in search of Michael. As Sheridan goes about trying to exist deep inside Zahadum, he happens upon a mysterious alien calling himself Lorien. Well, there it is.
There it is.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like a really stressful deep breath in the middle of going through hell.
Huh? Yeah. That's a heck of a start to the season.
Mm-hmm.
Character files opened.
So, we've got guest stars tonight. Actually, we've got sort of guest stars, and then, a couple new people.
Yeah, we do. Ed Wasser reprises his role as Mr. Moradin, but his time is coming short now. This is his 10th of 13 appearances on Babylon 5.
What? He didn't get blown up?
Apparently not. He kind of looks a lot like Delenn did after she came out of the cocoon.
Yeah.
And then we have Wortham Krimmer as Emperor Cartesia. And this is his first of 5 appearances on the show. He also appeared in the Twilight Zone TV series in 1987.
It's only 5? Wow. He has the presence he brings just makes it seem like he's there more than that. And he's like, everything he does weighs through the first third to half of the season.
The man makes me nervous.
Oh, well, you know, he's retired from acting and he's gone back to his original name of Robert. Mm-hmm. And he's a lawyer.
Oh. Well, I'm sure he's very successful.
I try not to make any, is he acting jokes then?
Okay, moving right along. We have Wayne Alexander as Lorien.
This is his first and not first appearance at the same time then.
Right. His first is Lorien, but a third of 12 appearances on Babylon 5 in various roles.
Mm-hmm.
And he also did appearances in 2 of the B5 television movies.
Right.
And last, but of course not least, the wonderful Mr. Damian London as Minister.
Yeah.
I don't know if we ever get this guy's name.
Oh, I thought it came to us at some point. But I can't remember it off the top of my head.
It'll be interesting to see. This will be his third of 9 appearances on Babylon 5.
Yeah. I remember he was definitely a loved character. And then...
Well, I'll tell you what. I like the Minister a lot because he's always right on the edge of hysteria.
Yeah.
Never quite gets there, but he just walks that thin edge and... Just a little push could just send him over the edge at any moment.
Uh-huh.
And he likes pastels.
And he likes pastels. Yeah. He was definitely a loved character. How do I put it? JMS Josh Whedon's him before Josh Whedon starts Josh Whedoning people.
Did you just verb a noun?
Of a sort, I guess.
How many woodchucks can chuck the wood in a wood chucking wood? Yeah. Okay. Anyway, enough of that.
Yeah.
Well, if we don't stumble across his name as we go along, I'm sure the fans can.
I don't think we do tonight. Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
Oh, we don't get a name tonight. I know that for sure. But in future episodes, he's either credited as minister and then later on, of course, as regent.
Right.
So.
And I can't remember if it was dropped somewhere in the movies or if it was dropped in the Centauri trilogy, but I'm knowing it was, it came up somewhere.
Okay, well, we'll have to figure that one out.
Yeah, I can't for the life of me remember. But on to the episode.
Initiating plot analysis.
We get a really nice recap, minus the Anna scream.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been 7 days since he went to Zaha Doom. And the whole thing, this whole opening, this whole recap is a Jakar monologue. And Jim, I'm going to ask you to play it. I know it's a little long.
All right.
It is now 7 days since we lost Captain Sheridan and Mr. Garibaldi. And in a way, I think we have also lost Ivanova. It is as though her heart has been pierced and her spirit has poured out through the wound. She blames herself. It is foolish. It is destructive. It is human. Ambassador Molari has returned to Centauri Prime to take up his role as advisor on planetary security. I suppose he is quite happy with his new position. It's what he always wanted. Power, title, responsibility. I think he is more alone than anyone else in the universe. Delenn has refused to eat for 7 days, fasting, praying, and waiting. Delenn believes. I think she is the only one who does. The shadows have paused in their pursuit of war, and everywhere there is a sense of imminent change. Whether it is a change for good or ill, no one can tell, because no one has yet answered two very important questions. Where is Mr. Garibaldi? And what happened to Captain Sheridan at Zaha Doom?
You remember I had talked about how kind of snaky, slimy Jakar was at the beginning in season one?
Right.
Completely gone now. He is a totally different character. And it's not that he's rewritten. It's pure character growth. I love it. Now, two questions, though. Where's Mr. Garibaldi and what happened to Captain Sheridan? I just found it interesting to note the order.
Okay, how so?
It's more of where we're seeing Jakar put his priorities, I guess, in a way.
Okay.
Where he had his connections. And We're actually gonna see some of this a little later on in the episode, and of course, think about it. What's the title of episode two?
Ah,
it's a combination of those two questions.
Whatever happened to Mr. Garibaldi?
Not where is Mr. Garibaldi, and what happened to Sheridan? It's what happened to Garibaldi.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I like I said, it's probably not anything major, just I found it interesting where Jakar put his first priority. And it's actually that prioritization is going to actually end up having a huge impact on Jakar and the show.
The blending of those questions, Raul, I thought you were suggesting that one might have something to do with the other.
Oh, I didn't go there, but you're right. There certainly is.
Two questions at the start of this episode, and the next episode title is a combination of the two questions.
Uh-huh. Very, very good point, JP. That's going to become fairly critical, I guess, in season four. Later in the season. It's going to be a huge part of the second half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
You are right. Good catch. Okay, we are back to the original theme music, too. Sort of.
Kind of.
Yeah, the same but different. I don't know if it was a key change, if it was the changes in, I know that I guess there were some changes in the rhythm. I'm not the musician, Jim is, but it's definitely a little bit more of a martial theme.
Harkens back to the beginning anyway.
Mm-hmm. With a more military flavor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good intro, though, for this season. This is definitely a little more of a military season. And I didn't realize this. We get Wortham Crimmer in almost immediately. There's no wasting time to get him introduced into the series. He does insane brilliantly.
He does. He seriously does.
Okay, though, Susan is a total mess, as is her room. The League is completely rattled.
Now, there's a lot of hostility there.
Yeah, and everything seems to be falling apart without Sheridan, which I don't know if this is really jumping ahead or not, but which kind of surprises me because, yeah, you lost Sheridan, but look how much damage and how much of a setback one person was able to cause.
Yeah. Well, they probably don't know that yet.
Yeah. The shadows have paused. So their attacks have stopped for the moment.
Well, it sure hasn't taken long for the League, though, to start crumbling. I mean, a week.
Yeah. A week. And they're afraid to go to Zaha Doom. And on the one hand, you hear some of them talking about how Sheridan's defeated them. On the other hand, it's like they're afraid of the boogeyman. So, which is it?
Oh, that was weird about this. Remember what the shadows told Sheridan before he jumped about his role? You know, he's a nexus, I think was the phrase they used. Mm-hmm. And he says, why don't you just kill me? And they said, well, you know, if we do that, there's just another one that'll rise.
Right.
Well, he ends up dead, and at least right here at this point at the beginning of season four.
Or presumed dead.
Right, but the assumption is he's gone, and there isn't an heir apparent, even though I wouldn't expect one to show up right away. But parts of the the League seem really tied to him. You know, the man, not somebody working in the same capacity. Oh, Sheridan's gone. Oh, man, I don't know. What did the Drazi say about the war? At this point, if he had shoulders to shrug, I guess, in a way we could see him. You can't win this war, Commander. You can only survive it.
You can only survive it.
He's all but given up hope, and I guess it's because Sheridan is gone.
Yeah, it kind of fits with one of my life theories, so to speak. I tend to subscribe to the idea that all loyalty is personal. It's not the there's patriotism, there's ideals, but somewhere in that chain, there is an individual to whom that loyalty gets attached.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of reflects that. It's directly that loyalty is to Sheridan, not to the ideas. The ideas aren't strong enough. It takes a person.
7 days isn't a long time when you think about the size of what's happening. But at the same time, that kind of mood in the league, that's the kind of thing you got to put a cork in quick because you see it outside of this context where people start to grumble and moan and they'll spin themselves into something that's much, much worse than what they started out grumbling and moaning about. And so poor Susan and Delenn and everybody has got this problem where the disheartened members of the league are being very vocal.
Yep. And, you know, politics is a very slow creep, except when it's not.
And Susan is not ready to step in to the command role because she's just out of sorts.
And there is one person, or better, maybe a better phrase is one individual, who could very easily, as JP puts it, stick a cork in it. And he did not come again.
Yeah. Yeah, the Vorlon, calling himself Kosh.
Mm-hmm. They're all Kosh.
Yeah.
But yeah.
They're not Earth Corps. Somebody's not going to send the next commander. She's an awesome...
Mm-hmm.
In the Air Force, we'd call her a DO, Director of Operations, or a Vice Commander. She doesn't seem to be wired to be the next Sheridan. And we see... That's not... No. News flash. Her place where she, you know, the thing she was born to do was be the second to somebody like Sheridan. And now she's it.
Which is not a denigration of her
right,
at all.
Right. It's the thing she's apparently made to do or to be, the person she's supposed to be. And, oh, well, the commander was killed. That's horrible. I wonder who they're going to send next. They're not sending anybody next. This is on her now. Her reaction through the beginning part of this show, through the whole show, I thought it was neat to see that she's not only professionally mourning the loss of her commander. Her relationship, the loss she feels is personal. So maybe tied to what you said, Raul. She's not just put out or saddened because a colleague has disappeared. Her loyalty, her love for the mission that Babylon 5 has, all that was placed in him. And now he's gone. And when you watch her face in the scenes, I thought she did a fantastic job of not being upset professionally only. She was upset personally at the loss of her boss. And I loved the way she acted these scenes where we get to see sad Ivanova.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, in some ways, she's not really holding up any better than the league.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. You know, I think if she had herself together, though, she would... I don't think she would have a horribly difficult time stepping into Sheridan's role if she really wanted it.
Right. I think she's got to get herself there, though.
She's negotiated enough things and been in on enough situations that I think she would handle it well. I mean, you know, just think back to the purple and the green.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, I just think this is out of her comfort zone. She never, you know, all the episodes that got us to hear the times when key people could have died. And it's clear she never envisioned a Babylon 5 without a commander, or with her being the commander.
Right.
And now that's what is happening, and she's just she needs to get past the loss, and I think kind of consistent with her character, suddenly she'll be Ivanova just in command as opposed to Ivanova who is second in command and gets to be the bad cop and all that kind of stuff.
The problem is, and this goes back to around the thinking of where Lloyd Ivanova is absolutely wonderful in executing the vision.
Yeah.
But establishing the vision and also inspiring the people to follow the vision is the problem. And that's where Delenn wouldn't be able to replace Sheridan any more than Ivanova, could she, Delenn might be able to establish the vision, but I don't know that she would be capable of creating the inspiration that's needed,
right,
to follow that vision. I don't think she can glue that loyalty to her.
Well, it's hard to say that because, you know, Ivanova's support system has dropped out from under her.
Mm-hmm.
Garibaldi's gone. Delenn has her own problems. She's trying to keep things together. Sheridan's gone, and just, you know, that just completely pulled the rug out from under her. So, you know, she's how much of a commander is the support system they have?
Yeah. You know, that's kind of the flip side of what JP was saying earlier. Susan's role is to be Sheridan's second. That's what she's wired to be. It's like, you know, can you have a successful Sheridan without people like Susan behind him?
Yeah.
I'd say you're right. You couldn't. You really can't.
But the League walks out, literally, when it's over. And even, what's the one League member, as they walk past?
They don't even wait for it to be over.
No, they get up and leave. They walk out, and one of them, as I recall, is shaking, you know, shaking his head, just like, you know. Hey, yep. Delenn, Susan, you're, yeah, okay, whatever, we're out. And they walk out.
Not a good story for the future there.
No.
But we got to move it on. It's not just the League that's having some shakeups, shall we say. Centauri Prime, the minister, one of Jim's favorite characters, it seems, and actually a lot of people's favorite guest characters. But, you know, it turns out Londo has actually met Cartesia before.
Yeah, apparently.
Go ahead and play that one for us, sir.
Minister, I have met Cartesia 3 times before. Twice when he was an infant, he drooled most of the time. I wonder if he has continued the habit. And again when he was 15, trying to pick up the dresses of some young women. I promise you, I will be just as impressed by him now as I was then. Yes?
I promise.
Yeah. Well, a few minutes later, he kind of makes this comment about, yes, you're just like I remember you, or something along those lines, and uh-huh. The look on the minister's face.
Uh-huh.
Gosh.
You know, and Londo is really sticking his neck out here because, you know, how does he know there aren't listening devices all over the place, or, you know, wow.
Yeah. Well, turns out he's a little more concerned about specifics, but yeah. And I'll tell you, Cartesia comes off as a little bit off, shall we say, at the very outset.
Huh.
Everything down to the exaggerated flapping of the arms and hair's just a bit short, shall we say?
Yeah. And he explains that is it allows him to walk among the people.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of a scary thought.
Yep.
Yeah, especially when we learn later how he views himself.
Yeah. And it seems that it wasn't Cartesia that wanted Londo back. It's that he was requested, quote-unquote, which is just a bit on the ominous side. Now, back on Babylon 5. Okay, Veer and Susan. Veer's got pretty good detailed description of what happened. So it's like, what is his source of intel here?
Hmm.
And I'm going to note, Veer kind of makes the comment that I made earlier, if one man can have that much impact, you know, referring to Sheridan.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he's able to officially give Susan a pretty detailed summary of all the, of exactly what happened with the Zaha Doom. Yeah. Topping off with the explosion, their main city is a smoking crater. And he kind of ends that with a comment about how we won't see Mr. Morden's face again.
Wrong.
Yep, of course. Cut to the very next scene.
Mm-hmm.
Cut to Morden's face.
Yeah, go ahead. In fact, go ahead and let's give it to them. This is, by the way, this is another very long cut, so it will probably get a fair amount of conversation out of it, but it's worth it.
Mr. Morden, you are...
unwell. My associates tell me I'll be better soon. I wasn't as near the incident as others.
And Sheridan?
Which one? You know what they say? What goes up must come down. Seen one Sheridan, seen them all. Ashes, ashes, we all fall down.
Shouldn't you be someplace where they can take care of you? Your injuries?
Flesh is transitory. Flesh is a prison. Flesh is an instrument. Flesh can be replaced. And flesh does as it's told. But they will become most annoyed.
What are you doing here?
Cartesia told you to expect a visitor, did he not?
He meant you?
What's left of me? I'm just a shadow of my former self. The incident at Zahadum has forced us to look for outside support sooner than we had intended. My associates are planning to move some of their forces off Zahadum to ensure their safety in case certain parties decide to take advantage of the situation. They did it before, 1,000 years ago. Planted their ships like seeds all around the galaxy. In exchange for certain favors, Emperor Cartesia has agreed to loan us a small piece of Centauri Prime.
No, he wouldn't. He couldn't. The Centaurum wouldn't stand for it.
The resolution was passed quietly. 14 opposed it. No one's seen them since.
He's mad.
If there's a madman on the throne, it's because you and Reefa put him there. He's your responsibility, and you... you are mine. Based on our warm relations of the past, my associates asked for you as our liaison to the royal court.
I don't care. I won't do it.
Of course you will, Mallari. Because you're drawn to power. Because you're my friend. Because you're afraid of what someone else might do in your place. My associates will be arriving soon. Make sure everything is ready.
That whole clip is just creepy beyond belief.
Yeah, well, first of all, Morden himself seems to be a bit unbalanced.
Yeah, well, getting blown up by two nuclear bombs might do that to you. But did you hear, yeah. I never caught this, watching it, but when it's just listening, you could hear that kind of schlocky crinkle sound.
Yeah.
That's him picking off chunks of his skin and kind of dropping them on the side. as he's talking to Londo.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the just total, like I said, creepy beyond belief.
Yeah. You know, and there towards the end of his remarks kind of foreshadows something that's very disturbing, and it's going to be very disturbing for Londo.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. The Drac?
Yeah. Well, actually, you just hit one out of my questions. Morden talks about his associates, and the way he's talking about them kind of makes you wonder, are we just talking about shadows, or are we talking about something more?
Yeah, there are more than just the
shadows.
Spider-like beings that
right.
were on Zahadum.
Yeah, just as the Vorlons have their chosen races to act out their part, it seems the shadows have their own followers and allies as well.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, Cartesia is giving, I guess, the forces of darkness or the forces of chaos, whatever you want, an entire island on Centauri Prime.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But it's just a small island.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And it was the shadows that asked for Millari as the liaison.
Well, he's a known quantity. Why wouldn't you ask for him?
Yeah.
They see Londo as being power hungry, wanting to climb to the top. Londo, of course, already knows he's going to be emperor at some point.
Right.
You know, all those things, and there's no Reefa to deal with anymore. So apparently they feel they have the ability to manipulate Londo into a position that would be advantageous to them.
You know, and I think a big part of that is what Morden ends with, as far as you don't know who we're going to put in. You don't know who would be in your place otherwise. It's that fear of if he doesn't do it, it could even be worse.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, back on Babylon 5, Delenn confronts Kosh Tu, and she is, shall we say, just a bit put out.
Yeah.
I don't think the Vorlons are quite used to being talking to or spoken to that way.
Sheridan talked to one like that and just about lost his life, right?
Just going to say that.
Except, you know, the original Kosh had sort of enough of a connection to humans, you know, to the younger races, that he took it personal enough to get angry. This Kosh, Delenn's almost, I mean, the way he comes off is almost as an irrelevant insect whose anger really doesn't even matter that she's angry or impudent. It's just so far she's just that far beneath him that even her outrage or lack of respect doesn't matter to him.
Well, this is a way different Kosh.
Mm-hmm.
The suit is darker, more angular.
More angry, almost.
Yeah. And he is, he seems colder.
Uh-huh.
Than original Kosh ever was.
And that comment of his, and this falls right in with, he opened an unexpected door, referring to Sheridan. That kind of makes it almost sound like the Vorlons are going to become as much of a problem as the shadows.
It does sound that way. But what door did Sheridan open? What door are they referring to?
That's a good question, because, you know, think about it. I mean, listening to Kosh Tu here, it makes it sound like even the Vorlons are afraid of Zahadum.
Oh, yeah.
Though they're not necessarily afraid of the shadows. So, yeah, what is this door?
I thought it was interesting that he says at some point in the discussion or the exchange, too, he says Sheridan is irrelevant.
Yeah.
And that immediately took me back to Morden in the creepy scene where he dismissively says, seen one Sheridan, seen them all.
Mm-hmm.
And that tracks with the, you know, back to the shadow perception of Sheridan that we talked about earlier, right?
As a nexus.
Right. You're a nexus. Probably, you know, I'm not going to kill you now, though, because the problem isn't really you, the person of you. It's that another you will appear. The problem is the nexus.
Yeah.
But Morden says, seen one, you've seen them all. And then Kosh 2 says, Sheridan is irrelevant. So those guys are on opposite sides, I guess, of the same page. I don't know how to paint the picture, but they both come across as, Sheridan, whatever.
Sheridan's yesterday's news.
Yeah, as far as Kosh is concerned, he has fulfilled his destiny.
Right.
And the Vorlons.
Kosh 2, you mean?
Yeah.
Right.
Have accepted that Sheridan is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Building drama. By the way, I liked Londo's, not to drag us back to the prior scene, but when I was talking about Susan's face and how well she acted the part of...
Yeah.
Showing us that Sheridan's... The loss of Sheridan was a personal loss, not just a professional loss. If you go back and watch Londo, when he's told, if there's a madman on the throne, it's because you and Rifa put him there. Mm. And Londo looks like he loses his breath. He almost like, oh.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? I knew that, but I didn't really, now you just hit me with it square in the face. And he looks, he looks like the wind left him. It's pretty, pretty cool scene. These actors are all good. They're,
mm-hmm.
You know, the OS light came on. It came back to the front of his mind when he's told, you did this.
Mm-hmm.
You're complaining there's a madman on the throne. You did it. You and Rifa did this. Mm-hmm. And,
And he
looks like he loses his air.
Yeah.
Where Londo could have stopped the whole thing way back. If he had just reported accurately what Emperor Turhan told him.
Yes.
Yep. That one word. Yeah. That one word made Kosh's whole prediction. How will it end? In fire.
In fire. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what happens when the pebbles try to vote after the avalanches started.
Yeah.
You get a three-edged sword.
We've heard of this before.
Jim's taking JP lessons. Oh, gosh. Well, as long as you're lightening things up a bit, let's go ahead and move on. Someone apparently has broken into Mr. Garibaldi's quarters.
Uh-huh.
Zach comes around the corner and it doesn't look good, right?
Nope. It's Jakar in Mike's fedora. I love that fedora. I want that hat.
Doesn't quite fit Jakar too well, but
you notice he strolls out with it still on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His reference to Garibaldi's religious beliefs, one of his household gods.
Yeah. The Egyptian god of frustration.
Daffy Duck.
First time I saw that put me on the floor. I mean, that was priceless.
Hey, I'm just glad the character, I mean, I've always said the Warner cartoons are timeless. They've lasted 300 years.
Yep.
but Jakar is going to look for Mike.
They've developed a relationship, a working relationship, mm-hmm. and Mike has come to respect Jakar.
Yeah. And as Jakar notes, who else is going to?
Mm-hmm.
With everything else that's going on, who else will? So he's going to, yeah. And this is very Narn. He's going to repay the debt that he believes he owes Mike.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to have, that simple decision is going to have huge, as I said earlier, it's going to have huge impact. And we'll see that in the very next episode.
Yes.
Now, back on Centauri Prime. And, you know, we're going to see a lot of this over. It's like, you know, for so much of the show originally, everything stayed on Babylon 5. And here with this, we've got the armies of light and we've got the armies of chaos. The army of light, obviously, is still Babylon 5. But in the first half of this, actually, for much of the rest of the season, the nexus for the chaos is going to be Centauri Prime. So we're going to see a lot of Centauri in the next. And, you know, thinking about it, I don't think Londo is going to be back a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's still a major character. It's still a major player. But he's kind of moving out of the orbit of the rest of the main cast.
Yeah, he won't be around or much at least for most. A while.
Mm-hmm. At this point, he can't find his black coat, so he has to wear the old purple one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's sort of an excuse because, well, we get a throwback to our Vision from season one where the character only had, you know, wardrobe only had that purple coat.
Yeah, but he's far from being the buffoon he was when he wore that purple coat.
Yeah.
Yeah, the guy relegated to the ambassador position that doesn't matter is now important.
Yeah, he matters a lot.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you could almost say he matters too much. In fact, he would probably agree with that. he would much prefer mattering a whole lot less. And in that mattering, he almost goes too far with Cartesia.
Yeah, he almost gets to the point where he isn't going to be mattering much anymore.
Yeah, especially considering that Cartesia really is mad. And you've got, this is another, you know, there's a lot of exposition, folks, in this episode. So we don't have maybe as many clips as some, but the clips that we do have are almost of necessity, a little longer. And if you really want to get an idea of what they're dealing with on Cartesia on Centauri, then this clip coming up here will tell you.
Magnificent, is it not?
Come away from the window.
Oh, I've never seen anything so fantastic.
I said come away from the window.
Forget yourself, Malari. It's an unhealthy mistake.
What have you done?
What have I done? I've done nothing. Given them the island of Salini. It's barely inhabited, perfectly suited for their purposes. It's a temporary situation. Shelter forces there until things calm down.
Madness.
They are guests of the Centauri Republic.
What did they give you?
Oh, it is strategically wise to make alliances that might prove useful.
What did they give you?
The one thing I have ever wanted. Read the old books, Malari. They speak of the ancient gods. They speak about them. Power. Power beyond description.
If their power is so great, why do they need to hide behind us? Hmm? They are using us as shields. When the war comes here, our people will die first.
Some are always sacrificed for the greater good.
What greater good?
Mine, of course, Malari. I thought you of all people understood. The Emperor is the soul of the people, the center of this republic. This whole world may perish. The Emperor goes on. We go on. The first emperors, the greatest of us, were themselves proclaimed deities by the ancient gods in exchange for loyalty. They became immortal.
Their names revered for generations to come. Prayers offered up to them, even in the temples today. And now these gods of old have returned. Through them, I will become a god myself. That is my destiny. I've known it all my life. It is what I was born for. And when the time comes, Mulari, the people will gladly lay down their lives that I may be elevated to godhood. What are a few million lives compared to the glory of becoming a living god? And when I become a god, I will forgive you your rudeness, Mulari. Then my capacities will be infinite. For now, I will simply try to forget it.
Try to forget it.
Lando needs to be careful.
Yeah, he was pretty bold. Even after he had that knife at his throat.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's definitely got a problem. And the conversation afterwards with the minister's scared too. Describes this rumored desk with heads of people who disagreed with Cartesia.
Sounds just like the crazy rumors that spawn around bad leadership, right? Come on, really?
Yeah.
A desk of heads. Come on.
Yeah. You notice how the minister's sort of grabbing or holding his neck at the end?
Well, obviously people have disappeared. So, you know, what else can you assume?
I'm kind of wondering, is that sympathetic / fearful, am I next kind of clutching at the neck? Or is that the result of some of the Shadow's associates that are presumably there already?
I hadn't thought about that, yeah.
Oh, well, the Shadow associates are already there.
Right.
I mean, Cartesia's standing there looking out the window saying how magnificent it is, watching his planet basically get occupied.
So has the minister already been controlled?
Or is he just that wacky?
Yeah. Just curious.
Yeah.
He's definitely nervous.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. All right. Back on Babylon 5. Lita's been toting around Kosh. This Vorlon, definitely not Kosh.
At least not the Kosh that we came to know and love.
Right.
Lita looks like hell. She looks like she has been dragged through hell.
Yeah. And, you know, she uses the phrase that you've described, darker.
Mm-hmm.
And the way he kind of just dismisses her, it's like, you lesser beings need sleep. Go away. I mean, I treat our puppy with more respect.
Well, he's just using her for, you know, to move around and keep an eye on things.
Moving on again, you know, now we're in the middle of the we're kind of in the middle of the nights at Babylon 5, and we're going to start getting to the whole meaning of the title here, because it seems that a lot of people are having trouble sleeping. Lando wakes up Veer in the middle of the night. He needs Veer at home. He's the only person he can trust.
Yep. He tells Veer, I need a friend and I need a patriot, and you are both.
Uh-huh. And he's not going to say anything more to that.
Other than to mention that you need more than one person to carry out a conspiracy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What sort of conspiracy could Lando have in mind?
Right. Hmm? Yeah, we've got half the fourth season for that. And it turns out Cartesia, his madness isn't feigned. He really does have a secret council of severed heads.
Yeah, gross. That was nasty.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine what that room must smell like?
Yeah. It's
and he doesn't appear to be bothered by it. He is gone off the deep end.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this... You know, folks, we were talking about Dr. Demento before the show. The old Dead Puppy song, Bill Mooney's band doing fish heads. Well, here we have another Dr. Demento opening here. They're coming to take me away.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, well, speaking of more things in the middle of the night, Lita takes her concerns to Susan. And if anything, the place is even more of a mess.
And Susan finds herself drowning her problems with alcohol.
Yep. Yeah. And that's where we get the description of what the hour of the wolf is. It's that can't sleep in the middle of the night around 3 to 4 in the morning because there's something so weighing on your mind. Mm-hmm. Her dad used to take care of the problem with a glass of vodka.
A big glass of vodka, right?
And three glass, little glasses for the puppies. In case there were any. Susan's doing it by the bottle.
Yeah. Yeah. She's having a rough time.
Mm-hmm. Lita thinks Sheridan might be alive and wants to find him. Wonder why she thinks he's alive.
Well, you know, the Vorlons keep saying if you go to Zahadum, you will die. Perhaps that wasn't completely true.
Or there's more to it than meets the eye.
Right.
Yeah, very much more.
But,
You think maybe they know about the mysterious Lorien being nearby?
Well, we haven't even gotten there yet. That's absolutely going to be... That might be part of it. But, I mean, they're certainly aware of his presence. I don't know if that's why they think Sheridan might be alive yet. But Lita's wanting to go, I think, mostly because she's already suspecting that there's something to do with the original Kosh with Sheridan. And mm-hmm. she'd be able to feel that link if he was break, if he was dead. Oh, and speaking of links, yeah. Susan losing her link somewhere in her couch.
Yeah, that was almost funny, that scene. But it kind of sad, too.
If it wasn't so sad.
Right. Susan has gotten to the point that she's that disheveled.
Uh-huh. You know,
if you pick a person on the station who would sleep with their phone in their hand, so to speak, that's Susan.
It's Susan, yeah.
And she's awake and sitting on the couch and drinking away the wolf and misplaces her link.
That tells you how messed up she is. But they pulled the lin in, and we've got the three ladies going in.
Yeah.
Ah, do we have more of the Arthur legend here?
Ooh, the three muses?
Yeah, well, there was the three ladies.
Yeah, the three muses that accompanied Arthur.
To Avalon was Guinevere, Morgan Le Fay, and the Lady of the Lake.
Though in this case, it's less of Avalon and more of the deepest pit of hell. Good analogy. Yeah.
It just struck me as that way. We've got the three women headed to Zahadum.
Uh-huh. Well, though, when you consider Lorien being there, you know, take the shadows out of it for a moment, there might be a little bit more to what you say.
Well, Lorien.
Yeah.
Could be Merlin.
Well, okay, remember the last time that Lita did the telepathic block? It was the blood in her eye?
Mm-hmm.
They upgraded this just a bit. It's now, and this is odd, it's almost like a shadow black eye in her. Even mm-hmm. though lack of better way of putting it, she's Vorlon technology. Just an interesting contrast there.
It's mood eyes.
You know, someday those are going to come back in style.
No doubt.
Oh, They already have. They come and go all the time. Yep.
You see them in the school, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, no, I haven't seen any for a while, but you know, the teeny bopper mall.
Yeah.
Jewelry stores like Claire's and so forth and so on.
Yep.
They've always got some kind of gimmick like that laying around.
Mm-hmm. Lita's mood is definitely not good if that's the case. And, you know, we get actually a repeat. Remember when Susan went into the Great Machine and accidentally got sidetracked off the path to Zahadoom?
Mm-hmm.
It's the same eye. They know they're there. It's the same kind. Basically, it's the same lines. The shadows know they're there. The eye, it's obviously some sort of psychic defense. It knows their names. It's a repeat of that, only on a more physical level. But, you know, that whatever that eye is, it still doesn't look like it's physical.
Yeah.
I don't know. What did either of you guys catch that, or what were your thoughts on that thing?
More symbolic than anything.
Yeah. A mental image or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mental image, but very real effect, because the entire crew succumbs to this one.
Right. As the discussion happens, everybody's falling into that trance.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever. I don't know what to call that, but.
That's, you couldn't call it anything better than that. It's like, okay, fresh processors for new shadow vessels here.
Mm-hmm.
Except maybe for Lita, who's probably going to be in for something much worse since she's a telepath.
No doubt.
Yeah. Fortunately, Lanier programmed a failsafe.
as they're outbound, and he says, in case something like this happened.
It's like, yep.
Of course I did.
Well,
yeah,
he's been around them before, so I wouldn't put it beyond him.
That was the only part of the script in this show, by the way, that I thought was clunky,
contrived.
Yeah, you know, whoa, what did you do? Well, if I didn't touch this button right here every 2 minutes, it's like, what? This button right here, what? Well, if I didn't, you know, activate. It was just, it was like, I wanted to see the button, and it's like, show me the button. What do you mean, this button right here? Oh, the button must be important. I want to see it now. And and we didn't get to see the button. Darn it.
Your biggest disappointment.
Yeah, that's right. Where's the button? But, yeah, it was just,
okay.
I fell out of the episode a little bit when that happened, because it was just so awkward.
But they do use Lanier. I mean, he does have this habit of thinking of those sorts of odd things. So,
well, I don't think JP's. Unless I'm wrong, I don't think JP is as befuddled by Lanier actually doing that
as not showing him the button,
right?
As well, showing him the button or mentioning this button right here. Clunky writing.
You know, if I didn't make an input to the controls every 2 minutes, the ship would return home. There's no, it's this button right here.
Oh, gosh.
But it was very linear. It was totally within character.
Right.
I felt teased as audience, though.
You know, you're reminding me of an old story about Star Trek. And this is actually out of the book The Making of Star Trek, the original fairly thick gray one. Apparently, and I think it was Sulu, the director was telling Sulu, and the guy would have to be thinking of camera angles and stuff like that. When this happens, say your lines and then hit this button. And Takai just flat out refused and got into an argument with the director over it, and it finally came out. If I press that button, it'll blow up the Enterprise. I mean, they took it far. Yeah, I mean, far enough to actually what controls do what.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But while it was fortunate that Lanier was planning ahead, Less fortunate, there was no sign or signal of Sheridan.
Mm-mm.
Except Raggedy Hermit with a command bar.
Yeah. But before that, you know, they've got to get going right away, because Lanier says, initiating getting the hell out of here maneuver.
Yeah, one of the...
You know, Susan, let's get the hell out of here.
She's had an impact on him.
Yes.
Yep. Definitely. Okay.
Now wait till you hear what happens the next time she says, "Oh hell."
Oh God. Yeah. So why didn't they open? Yeah. Well, Londo is a little more worried about listening devices, you know, like you had mentioned earlier, because Vera arrives, and wow, Londo plotting with Vera. It's like Vera somehow, in the middle of all of this, and Londo recognizes it, has managed to keep his virtue.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's Vera. You know, Vera is an honorable person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, though, the first time I saw this episode, and you get that wide angle shot with Vera and Londo in the same shot.
Right.
It just blew me away how much weight he lost.
Actually, that was a very recent thing between the seasons. He first was diagnosed with diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
And was taking steps to maintain his health, to preserve his health.
Yeah, which he managed to do for quite some time.
Some years.
Mm-hmm. And became a spokesman for the cause of diabetes.
Yes, he did. I'm trying to think, when did he pass away? June 16th, 2017, at age 63.
Yeah.
Too young.
Way too young, and a lot of talent. And he was actually a director for the show as well, I think, at least one point.
There was one little bit of humor written into this part, too. You know, we're talking about Vera's virtue, and Londo pulls the wand out to check for listening devices, and Vera kind of shows his innocence. He reacts like, oh my. And then they have this discussion, and Londo says people resisting are getting killed or something to that effect, right?
Uh-huh.
And Vera goes, well, that would be a drawback.
Yeah. The ending, as the show wraps up, but next to last scene, is sort of ending as it opens, with Susan's quarters at least. But the hour of the wolf has passed, and at least now she can move on.
Yeah, she has finally now decided to get herself together, and time to roll up the sleeves and get back to work.
Yep.
The captain is dead.
She knows she's going to need help, but she knows how to move on and get what needs to be done. And at the end, Sheridan is wrapped in an old tattered rag that Hermit with the command bar that we saw earlier, you know, was him as expected, shivering before a fire.
Yeah.
And who is this friend that comes to him?
Well, we'll have to tune in next time to get the full story on that.
How in the world did he even build a fire?
It's in the script.
Oh, Boy Scout skills.
Yeah. Actually, JP, in this case, you're right in more ways than you think, because it's not only in the script, it actually has there is something really going on here.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But like Jim said, next time. Though I'm trying to think how much of it is actually next time.
We could just say soon.
Soon.
More soon.
Yeah.
But Yeah, that's a huge reset, recap, get you geared up from what happened last season and ready for the questions that are going to be rising this season.
Mm-hmm.
So, gents, thoughts?
Good episode.
Well, you know, yeah, a good episode. You know, I found some parallels here going on, some interesting parallels to I, Claudius.
Oh.
You know, you take Vir, who is a tongue-tied young man who is looked down upon, who will eventually become emperor. But before that, you have Cartesia / Caligula.
Caligula.
A lunatic youth who becomes emperor and becomes increasingly insane as time goes on.
Huh. Really good point.
So, what would Londo's role be in all this? In that analogy?
I don't know.
Tell us.
Yeah. Tune in next time.
Yeah. We'll have to see. See how this develops.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know what? Perhaps Londo takes on Nero's role and just stands around and fiddles while
Centauri Prime burns. Right on.
Oh, gosh. Though not quite as insane as Nero.
Well, that's relegated to Caligula.
Hmm. That would be interesting to just dig in and do some cross comparison. Roman emperors compared to Centauri history. I wonder if anyone out there has ever done that.
I don't know.
Hey, Troy, you're the genius of the Babylon 5 mythos. Let us know. Oh, anyway, yeah, it was a great episode.
Mm-hmm.
So, sir, I know we've talked this one pretty thoroughly through. What have we got in store for ourselves next week? I think we've mentioned the title, haven't we, already?
Yeah, whatever happened to Mr. Garibaldi, I think we're going to get some answers to that.
Uh-huh. And we will probably get a whole lot.
Yeah, and not all of them are going to be pleasant.
Yeah, we're going to get a whole lot about Sheridan, too, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting one about Sheridan, in fact. We'll get a lot of those questions that came up at the end there answered, I think. So, any final thoughts, closing thoughts, gentlemen?
No.
Yeah.
Well, then I've got to ask, was there any boom today?
Not really.
Season started with a bang, but no boom.
No boom, bang.
Any boom or bang tomorrow?
There's always boom tomorrow.
Yeah.
Is there?
Are we done?
I think we are done, unless you have anything to add.
Well, then I think I'll just initiate that getting the hell out of here maneuver.
All right. Well, we had a blast, folks. We always look forward to your comments. Look forward to your feedback. Send it in. The more you send in, the more we'll be able to do some feedback episodes in between, too. So have a good night, everyone.
Say goodnight, JP.
Goodnight, JP.
So long, everyone.
So long.
Podcast terminated.
Thank you for listening to the Babylon Project podcast. You can email Raul and Jim at thebabylonprojectpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at the Babylon Project Podcast. On the internet, we are at babylonprojectpodcast.wordpress.com. To subscribe to the podcast, you can find us on iTunes, or you can subscribe to the RSS feed on the webpage.